Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 1. If you're going to memorize the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, you must begin with this verse. It's page 43 in this edition. Okay, everybody have a copy? Grab one there. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, this is a very lengthy Sanskrit verse, about 20 syllables per line, but it is very sweet and powerful if you let it enter into your heart. So I'd like to chant it a few times and ask at least 6 or 8 of you to chant it, take turns chanting this, and seriously think about memorizing it, making it part of your canon. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigyasvarad. Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigyasvarad. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye. Tejo vari madam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Hamna swena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigyasvarad. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yatsurayaha. Tejo vari madam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna swena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigyasvarad. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yatsurayaha. Tejo vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna swena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dimahi. Who would like to chant? Janmad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigyasvarat. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yatsurayaha. Tene bari madam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Tamna swena sadani rastakua kam satyam param dimahi. Janmadyasya yaton vayat itaratas charteshwa bigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye muyanti yat surayaha. Tene vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna svena sadam nirasta kua kam satyam imahi. Janmadyasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye muyanti yat surayaha. Tene vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Kamna swena sada nirasta kuha kam sadyam param dimahi. Dhamnad yasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye muyanti yat surayaha. Tejo bari mridam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna swena sada nirasta kua kam satyam param dimahi. Janmadyasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshwa bigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye muyanti yat surayaha. Tene vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna swena sada nirasta kuha kam satyam param dimahi. Janmadyasya yaton vayat itaratas chartesha bigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye muyanti yat surayaha. Tene vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna swena sada nirasta kua kam satyam param dimahi. Very good. Anyone else? Janmadyasya yaton vayad itaratashcharte shvabhigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yat surayaha. Tejo vari madam yata vini mayo yatra tri sargom risha. Dhamna swena sadhanirasta kuakam satyam param dimahi.
Very good. Anyone else? Shashi, were you reading that from the Devanagari? Or were you? No? Just, okay, just. Anyone else like to try? Okay. Actually, let's read these in unison, shall we? Om, O my Lord, Nama, offering my obeisances, Bhagavate, unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudevaya, unto Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, or Lord Shri Krishna, the primeval Lord, Janmadi, creation, sustenance, and destruction, Asya, of the manifested universes, Yataha, from whom, Anvayat, directly, Itarata, indirectly, Cha, and Arteshu, purposes, Abhigya, fully cognizant, Swarat, fully independent, Tene, imparted, Brahma, the Vedic knowledge, Hridha, consciousness of the heart, Ya, one who, Adikavaye, unto the original created being, Muhyanti, are illusioned, yet about whom, Surayaha, great sages and demigods, Teja, fire, Vari, water, Mridam, earth, Yata, as much as, Vinimaya, action and reaction, Yatra, whereupon, Trisargaha, three modes of creation, creative faculties, Amrisha, almost factual, Tamna, along with all transcendental paraphernalia, Swena, self-sufficiently, Sada, always, Nirasta, negation by absence, Kuhakam, illusion, Satyam, truth, Param, absolute, Dimahi, I do meditate upon. Before you turn the page, a few things on this page. First, notice that the last word in the verse is dhimahi, right? I do meditate upon. Dhyan means meditation, the root word. So this is as we were discussing the other morning about how the verb can appear at the end of the sentence in Sanskrit. So dhimahi, this is the verb for the entire verse. I meditate on Krishna. So like Master Yoda, is that the verb that appears at the end of the sentence sometimes. It doesn't matter in Sanskrit. Also, on the second line, the discussion is about how the Lord imparted knowledge into the heart of Brahma. A very poetic use of words here. Tene Brahma Hridha. Hridha means heart. Adikavaye. So, what does this word Adikavaye mean? Unto the original created being. Who is the original created being? Brahma. But what does Brahma mean in the sentence? Yeah, the Vedic knowledge. He's so poetic. He's saying he imparted Brahma into the heart of Brahma. It's the spiritual knowledge into the heart. But he says Adikavaye, the original created being, instead of repeating Brahma. So, okay, a couple of points on that. So let's read the translation in unison, please. O my Lord, Shri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Shri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So Vyasadeva was asked by his spiritual master to describe Krishna in this work, and here is his first statement. Who would like to read the purport? Start. Okay. Now, after Clayton, why don't you read the entire long paragraph here? Yeah. And then afterwards, I'm going to ask you what you have just heard. Okay.
Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, directly indicate Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. This fact will be more explicitly explained in the text of this work. Sri Vyasadeva asserts herein that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all others are his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of the portion. Srila Jiva Goswami has even more explicitly explained the subject matter in his Krishna Sandarbha, and Brahma, the original living being, has explained the subject of Sri Krishna substantially in his treatise named Brahma Samhita. In the Samaveda Upanishad, it is also stated that Lord Sri Krishna is the divine son of Devaki. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord, and if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means the all-attractive. In Bhagavad Gita, in many places, the Lord asserts himself to be the original personality of Godhead, and this is confirmed by Arjuna, and also by great sages like Narada, Vyasa, and many others. In the Padma Purana, it is also stated that out of the innumerable names of the Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal one. Vasudev indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and all the different forms of the Lord, being identical with Vasudev, are indicated in this text. The name Vasudev particularly indicates the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. Sri Krishna is always meditated upon by the Paramahamsas, who are the perfected ones among those in the renounced order of life.
Imagine you are Srila Prabhupada sitting in Radhadamodara Temple in Vrindavan, sitting down to write the first purport of the 18,000 purports in front of you. And so how would you begin? What did you hear Prabhupada saying in this first paragraph of the first purport? What is he doing? And give me the macro picture of what he has just done in this purport.
We're giving references to all shastras and other acharyas.
That's it, exactly. One reference after the next. 7-8 shastric references in the first paragraph. This Vyasadeva is saying Krishna is God. Jiva Goswami said Krishna is God. The Samaveda Upanishad said Krishna is God. Lord Brahma himself says Krishna is God. What's next? The Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself says he's God, and Arjuna confirms it. And Narada, Devala, Vyasa, Asita, they all say the same thing. So, if you study Prabhupada's purports in depth, you'll see almost every sentence is born out of some reference from the Shastra. So here it is just very explicit. He just starts out like that. Once Srila Prabhupada, once a disciple left the Association of Devotees, and Prabhupada was sad, and he said, I could understand why he would not believe me, But how could he not believe the Vedic literature? That was his. That was Prabhupada's. They say in German, Weltanschauung, his worldview, that the Vedic literatures are the absolute truth. We cannot imitate that. If we try to imitate, then we become what? What are people who have religion without philosophy? Fanatics, right? Or sentimentalists, or both. So, nonetheless, we can learn, we can see when somebody is actually enlightened through the Vedas, how they just cannot imagine anything else, any other point of view. For example, when the Americans went to the moon in 1970, what was it, 75 or thereabouts? Oh, yeah, it was more like, yeah, 69, that was it, the first time, yes. So, Prabhupada very bluntly said, I do not think they went to the moon. He said, because the moon planet is further than the sun. I mean, he just said this as just like, you know, it's sunny outside today, just as an absolute matter of fact. And all of his faithful disciples were looking at him with their jaws hanging off. What did I just hear? but he then explained, he said, every culture in the world, if the sun is further than the moon, then why is it in every culture in the world, first it's Sunday, then it's Monday? Why is that? Then he explained, as in terms of there's as the crow flies, but then there's also terms of the elevation of the planets. There's, in other words, there's dual axes, vertical and horizontal. So just like, for example, if you are in a city with big skyscrapers, you could be standing in front of a tall skyscraper, just right next to the building. But a person a quarter mile away is closer to you than a person on the top floor of the skyscraper. You say, so which is closer, the person at that building or this building? See? So the sun is closer in the respect that a quarter mile away, that person is actually physically closer to you than the person half a mile up in the skyscraper. You see? So there's different ways, different planes of reality. So I'm just giving this as an example. Prabhupada had such explicit, implicit faith in the Vedic literatures. And it is said that yasya deva para bhaktir yato yata deva tata guru. Only one who has implicit faith in both the scriptures and the spiritual master can actually understand the import of the Vedic knowledge. So how do we acquire that faith? This is what hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is about. But just as in a court of law, the lawyer will come with, okay, Your Honor, here are the facts of the case, and here are the precedents. This precedent, this precedent, this precedent, and this precedent. So the judge will take that very seriously because the case has already been made so many times. Right? So this is how Prabhupada begins his presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So much authentic scriptural reference. I just want to emphasize this point because people without this knowledge, or without precedent, without references, how can they give spiritual information? How can they really give enlightenment? However clever they are at juggling words. One of our local friends who's an impersonalist yoga or guru of sorts, he was asked to give to speak at Olivia's yoga class. Right? And not to pick on him, he's a nice guy, but he was asked to speak for an hour, and he spoke for 3.5 hours, right? Now, Olivia, for the part of that 3.5 hours that you were awake, can you remember many scriptural references? So this is the point, that people may speak in a very eloquent way, very flowery, just shooting from the hip, you know, or making up their own philosophy. You won't find this in Srila Prabhupada's books. He's just this reference, this reference, this reference, this reference. It's so powerful like that. It is not something he's just making up. And that is his worldview. Okay? That is how he sees Krishna everywhere. Any comments or questions on this section?
Prabhu, when you said implicit faith, what does that mean? Well, you said explicit faith and implicit faith.
Implicit.
I mean, I know implicit, but what's the meaning of implicit faith? I mean, what actually, how it translates to understanding in Krishna consciousness?
Implicit faith means that it is assumed that it is true. It's not something one is debating. You know, it is implicit. It is ingrained. It is vijnan. Okay, that's the difference. There's the knowledge, jnana, and then there's realized knowledge, vijnan. That's implicit faith. Just as every one of us is an adult, so we know that if we put our hand on the griddle, it's going to get burned. It's going to hurt. We have gained implicit faith in that fact, perhaps by bitter experience, right? Or at least by seeing the experience of others. So we have implicit faith in things that we have experienced. So experiences in Krishna consciousness are very important and powerful like that because they lead us to this implicit faith. Pardon? Explicit faith? No, I misspoke. I meant to say implicit. Okay. Explicit is like just more like jnana. Okay. Who had a question? Amrita, you had a question?
This is just a side note, but there is tons of evidence that we didn't land on the moon. Tons. Did not.
Yeah, rationally that would be explicit evidence. But Prabhupada just implicitly said, we couldn't have gone to the moon. And then he said, even if we went there, they couldn't stay. And then he said, even more practically, they spent billions of dollars and brought back a few rocks. And they discovered that the rocks are the same as the rocks on Earth. So what is the point? Even if they went there, what is the point?
In the translation, there's a word that's cognizant. What is that one?
Abhigya. Yeah, abhigya. Abhigya means fully aware of everything. Yes. Okay. Yes, he's fully aware of everything. Can you imagine? He knows what everyone is thinking at every moment, and every living entity, the countless living entities. That is Krishna. Explicit means like detailed, perceivable externally. Implicit is more internal. Explicit is external. Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Well, as devotees, we have tendency to sort of use logic to cut logic, like the man did not land on moon, things like these. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, never sort of appreciate this idea of reconciling Vedic knowledge with present astrology. Astronomy. It's something which will never give any results if we sort of try to invoke logic and either justify Vedic Shastric knowledge or try to defy scientific knowledge.
Right, this is a different epistemology, a different mode of knowledge. So in other words, we're trying to reconcile the Vedas with observable phenomenon in modern science. Will probably be like Gajendra, the elephant stepping in the water and getting caught by the crocodile. The crocodile was much smaller than the elephant, but because he was in his native environment, he was able to pull him in. Okay. So we don't want to go too much into the explicit category. Okay. And if there are parts of the Vedas that people can't understand, don't dwell on them. Try to find parts that they can't understand. This is them. Okay. Who would like to read next paragraph? Joy?
Vasudev, or Lord Shri Krishna, is the cause of all causes. Everything that exists emanates from the Lord. How this is so is explained in later chapters of this work. This work is described by Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya as the Spotless Puran because it contains a transcendental narration of the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna. The history of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also very glorious. It was compiled by Sri Vyasadeva after he had attained maturity and transcendental knowledge. He wrote this under the instructions of Sri Nardaji, his spiritual master. Vyasadeva compiled all Vedic literatures containing the four divisions of the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutras, or the Brahma Sutras, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, and so on. But nevertheless, he was not satisfied. His dissatisfaction was observed by his spiritual master, and thus Narada advised him to write on the transcendental activities of Lord Sri Krishna. These transcendental activities are described specifically in the 10th canto of this work, but in order to reach to the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky, and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for a man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creations. He is not only the creator of the universe, but the destroyer as well. The manifested cosmic nature is created at a certain period by the will of the Lord. It is maintained for some time, and then it is annihilated by His will. Therefore, the supreme will is behind all cosmic activities. Of course, there are atheists of various categories who do not believe in a creator, but that is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The modern scientist, for example, has created space satellites, and by some arrangement or other, these satellites are thrown into outer space to fly for some time as the control of the scientist who is far away. Similarly, all the universes with the innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead.
In Vedic literatures, it is said that the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being, Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. And above Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities, and the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Living Being, has the greatest intelligence, and he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the supreme intelligence as the Parameshwara. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the supreme intelligence, addressed as the Para or the Parameshwara or the supreme personality of Godhead. And that Parameshwara is Sri Krishna, as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva, and specifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other paratattva samam bonam than Himself. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the paratattva Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto.
Unscrupulous persons go immediately to the 10th canto, and especially to the 5 chapters which describe the Lord Ras dance. This portion of Srimad Bhagavatam is most confidential part of this great literature, unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord. One is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastime called Ras dance and his love affair with the gopis. This subject matter is highly spiritual, and only the liberated person who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramhamsa can transcendentally relish this rasa dance. Srila Vyasadeva therefore gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of pastimes of Lord. Therefore, he purposely invokes a Gayatri mantra, Dhimani. This Gayatri mantra is meant for specially advanced people. When one is successful in chanting the Gayatri mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must therefore acquire Brahmical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness in order to chant the Gayatri mantra successfully, and then attend to the stage of transcendentally realizing the Lord, His name, His fame, His quality, and so on.
how is Gayatri Mantra is different from the Hare Krishna Mantra, Mahamantra?
Hare Krishna Mantra is for everyone. Gayatri Mantra is meant for Prabhupada, what Prabhupada said, the competent Vaishnava. And there's some history there. The Gayatri was kept as a secret property of the Brahmin class, right? And they said, oh, you have to be born a Brahmin to chant the Gayatri. It'll only be given to the Gayatri. There's a religious movement in India where they broadcast that, no, everyone can chant the Gayatri. But the Gayatri Mantra is not a replacement for the Maha Mantra, but it is practiced by those who, as Prabhupada said, can do it successfully by living in the mode of goodness. They can live in the mode of goodness, confidently follow the regulative principles, stay engaged in devotional service. Then the Gayatri Mantra is given for such an established Vaishnava. That was Prabhupada's application. Okay? Yes? No, there's several Gayatri mantras. We chant the Kama Gayatri. Yeah. Kama Gayatri. Right? Is that correct? Vajvasi Prabhu. So, and is there a competent Vaishnava to offer the breakfast here? Where is Nima? Oh, yeah, Nima Panda. Amrita, would you like to do the honors? Thank you. Yes, so any other questions, what we've read? Yes.
Is it recommended to be initiated, second initiated, to read the 10th canto? Is that what it's trying to say? Like, you should be at that level before you even think about reading it or something? Or understanding it?
No, not necessarily. What he's saying is that you go through the first 9 cantos. Right, and the first 9 cantos are there to help the explicit knowledge that Krishna is God become implicit. Become realized and enter deeply in our heart. So then we can see Krishna may do this strange thing or this strange thing without saying, what? Wait a minute, maybe he isn't God after all. See, because that's the point. God is not formulaic. He doesn't have this job description. You know, he doesn't punch in every morning and say, okay, time to get back to the whatever. blessing and condemning. He does whatever he likes, whenever he likes, however he likes. What is that verse? Kriya. When he just thinks of something, it becomes reality. So whatever he thinks about, whatever he chooses to do, he's totally free. To understand Krishna, therefore, is a big subject. And anyway, we'll talk more. Would you like to read next?
Vasudeva, or Lord Sri Krishna, is the cause of all causes. Everything that exists emanates from the Lord. How this is so... What? Oh, sorry. Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the Svarupa of the Lord manifested by His internal potency. And this potency is distinguished from the external potency which has manifested the cosmic world, which is within our experience. Srila Vyasadeva makes a clear distinction between the two in this shloka. Sri Vyasadeva says herein that the manifested internal potency is real, whereas the external manifested energy in the form of material existence is only temporary and illusory, like the mirage in the desert. In the desert mirage, there is no actual water. There is only the appearance of water. Real water is somewhere else. The manifested cosmic creation appears as reality, but reality of which this is but a shadow, is in the spiritual world. Absolute truth is in the spiritual sky, not the material sky. In the material sky, everything is relative truth. That is to say, one truth depends on something else. This cosmic creation results from the interaction of the three modes of nature, and the temporary manifestations are so created as to present an illusion of reality to the bewildered mind of the conditioned soul, who appears in so many species of life, including the higher demigods like Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and so on. In actuality, there is no reality in the manifested world. There appears to be reality. However, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists with His transcendental paraphernalia.
The
The chief engineer of a complicated construction does not personally take part in the construction, but he knows every nook and corner because everything is done under his direction. He knows everything about the construction, both directly and indirectly. Similarly, the personality of Godhead, who is the supreme engineer of this cosmic creation, knows every nook and corner, although affairs are being carried out by demigods. Beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, no one is independent in the material creation. The hand of the Lord is seen everywhere. All material elements, as well as all spiritual sparks, emanate from Him only. And whatever is created in this material world is but the interaction of two energies, the material and the spiritual, which emanate from the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. A chemist can manufacture water in a chemical laboratory by mixing hydrogen and oxygen. But in reality, the living entity works in the laboratory under the direction of the Supreme Lord. And the materials with which he works are also supplied by the Lord. The Lord knows everything directly and indirectly, and He is cognizant of all minute details, and He is fully independent. He is compared to a mine of gold, and the cosmic creations in so many different forms are compared to objects made from the gold, such as gold rings, necklaces, and so on. The gold ring and the gold necklace are qualitatively one with the gold in the mine, but quantitatively the gold in the mine is different. Therefore, the absolute truth is simultaneously one and different. Nothing is absolutely equal with the absolute truth, but at the same time, nothing is independent of the absolute truth.
Thank you. So, tomorrow, Mother Nanda will take up the purport from this point. So, if you would please turn back to the translation. It's page 44. Is it page 44 in everyone's books? Anyone? It's not? Okay, good. So, we all have the same edition. So, this is... let's see if we can wrap our heads around this a little bit better. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because He's the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and He is independent because there is no other cause beyond Him. So here he said, briefly, trying to define the Supreme Person. Everything has come from Him. He creates it, He maintains it, He destroys it. He's aware of everything in it, and yet He's completely independent. He is not affected or controlled by any of it. Okay? So these are job descriptions, if you will, or not job description, more like characteristics of Krishna's position, which is not easy to understand, which is just being introduced in this verse. It is He only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. Okay, so all the knowledge of the Vedas comes from Him. Here the author is distinguishing that even the great demigods like Lord Brahma don't have knowledge independently of Krishna. He gave them all the instructions for creating the universe. Generally, this is the conception of God, that He's the person who made the universe. But here, we're reading that, no, it was Brahma who made the universe under the directions of Krishna and with the empowerment of Krishna. So he's packing all of this information in the first verse. By Him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of Him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. So this is another important theme of the verse. How the whole creation that we're living in is illusory. So this is very logical. If you were sending a message to somebody in another place, you wanted to get your message across, you would naturally communicate in language that is comprehensible to them, in terms that are relevant to them as they are experiencing things at that moment. So this message of Srimad Bhagavatam is coming to us from the spiritual world here into the material world. And the message is, okay, everything you see around you It appears to be factual, but it's just as illusory as a mirage in the desert. You know, in the desert, it really looks like there's water out there. When you're driving in the hot desert, anyone experience that? Haven't we all experienced that? It really looks like there's water. You could just swear it's there. And many an animal will dash off after it and end up as a pile of bones in the sand. So the things of this world appear to be so important, so delicious, so appealing, that they just dominate our consciousness. And we think we cannot experience happiness without them. This is the illusion. It's not that they're unreal. I mean, they're here. They have a purpose. They have an existence. But they're just not going to satisfy our heart. That's the point. From the mental platform, yes, it's all real. But from the heart, it's illusion. It's illusion to think that we could find happiness in this world. In her discussions with Lord Krishna, Queen Rukmini has this beautiful statement. She makes this beautiful statement. One time she was fanning Krishna, and Krishna, in order to joke with her, his beloved wife, said, you know, you really should have married Shishupal. You blew it when you married me. And he begins describing himself in many ways. Nobody knows what caste I belong to. I don't have any particular occupation. In this oblique way, he's saying similar things, but putting it in a way that makes him look like a real loser. You know, you really should have married somebody better like Shishupal. And because I love you so much, I will release you to marry an appropriate person. And upon hearing this, of course, Queen Rukmini, who was very simple-hearted, she just fainted, just fell over like a banana tree in a hurricane. So then Krishna manifested his four arms so he could simultaneously pick her up and do something else, I forget. But then he apologized. I didn't mean to. I was just trying to get you angry because you're so beautiful when you're angry. And and then she began speaking, and she says, how could I marry, and then she uses very eloquent language about this bag of, marry some person who's nothing really but a bag of bile and various disgusting things with a mustache on the front. So how could I love such a thing? So in her speech and many other places, this quality of the illusion of the material world is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. So then notice here in the last line, I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Shri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. So first he defines what is this environment in which we find ourselves. And then he, establishing that, then he defines the atmosphere to which we might aspire, which is free of the stuff that he just described in this atmosphere. The things that make us chase after illusions and hurt ourselves in the process. So the spiritual world is free of that illusion. And Krishna is forever living there in his transcendental abode, completely self-satisfied, and it is that person upon whom I meditate. So here's the essence of the verse. You get the idea? So sweet. Any comments now or more discussion?
Actually, I was going to ask to repeat just quickly on the flow you just mentioned. So he describes the situation, like this is all illusion, yes. And then next he says where we will go, like what is transcendental, is that next thing which he says.
He's describing Krishna, and he says Krishna has made everything that you see, but it's all illusion, illusory, misleading you. And even, you see, just so that we don't feel too embarrassed, he says, even great sages and demigods are illusioned by it. So it's not critical. He's just saying you're in a place where everyone is illusioned. And
this person who has created everything you see. But he personally is in his own abode, which is free of this illusion. So in summary, here's the statement of the first verse. Therefore, he's connecting with us just like a modem might connect with your computer. He's trying to speak our language. He's trying to address us within the realm of our experience in a way that we can relate to. So beautiful. This is great literature. Great literature. Talk to your audience. You could start, if you're giving a class on Krishna consciousness, you could start by quoting so many verses, yada, 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 uvacha. But the people you're speaking to will just, they say, okay, well, what else is new? In other words, they won't connect, they won't relate to it. And this is a quality of inexperienced speakers. The experienced speaker will speak in a way that people can understand. So trying to address the people in the audience that are actually willing to hear. So Vyasadeva's verse, Srila Vyasadeva's verse, begins like this. His work, this 18,000 verses, begins with this verse. You are in a place of illusion. The person who created all this is above that illusion. Everybody's subjected to it, but he is not. He is above it, and therefore he is. Therefore, I meditate upon him. See, this is personalism, personal meditation. It never fails to amaze me how people are so confident that Krishna cannot be God. People who have no knowledge of Krishna say, "Well, okay, he can't be God," because how could God be so? Doing such strange things as playing a flute and dancing and tending cows. This doesn't compute. Blessing and condemning, that computes. So where's Krishna condemning? Where's the blessing? What's going on? Where is he sitting in judgment of everybody? This isn't God. It is the way to make the knowledge of the Vedas implicit. Deep within our heart to meditate on this incredible person in a deep way. Not as sentimental. You see, it's not even slightly sentimental to think Krishna is God. On the contrary, to think God is anyone or anything else, that's sentimental. That means there's no real knowledge behind it. Just my idea of God is this. And today it's like very politically correct. Oh yes, you have your idea of God. I have my idea of God. We can all have our own ideas of God. As if we were a bunch of enlightened people instead of fools, Oh, how can we have our own idea of God? God is so much greater than us. Look at the sky at night. Prabhupada writes so poetically. A person looks out in the sky and sees all this incredible creation, which is so far beyond us. We can't even begin to understand it. So how can we begin to understand the person who made it all? Well, it's tough, but it is possible to try. And in trying, one becomes a truly developed and well-rounded human being, a truly happy and satisfied human being. It feeds the heart to try to meditate on Krishna. It is a lifetime endeavor, many lifetimes endeavor. We'll never know. Like Lord Brahma, when Krishna revealed his trick, how he had made all the cowherd boys, how he replaced them all, Lord Brahma said, others may say, others may be able, they may say they know you. As far as I am concerned, even if I could count every grain of sand on the earth, I still would not be able to enumerate your glories because they are more numerous than that. So even Krishna himself doesn't know his own glory. One time Krishna was walking in the palace in Dwarka, and he saw his reflection in one of the pillars, and he just stopped, and he was stunned. Oh, who is this beautiful person? Krishna himself, and this is like impossible. How can God knows everything? How could he not know his own glories, the extent of his own glories? Does anyone know? Because they're always increasing. As soon as he knows them all, they just got bigger, and then he knows them, but then they get bigger again. This is Krishna. Isn't it getting bigger within his control?
In other words, can he say, okay, I'm going to stop him right here so I can catch them all? Yes, let's leave it at that. Prabhupada said, the atheists like to make this argument. Can God make a mountain that's so heavy he can't lift it? You know, as if they've just now defeated the whole concept of God. God can do anything, right?
Right.
Can he make a mountain that's so heavy he can't lift it? Prabhupada said, yes, and then he can lift it.